Morning. Up until sometime in September, I was the lead pastor of a church, fellowship church like this in Chilliwack. And pretty much as soon as I celebrated my, in quotes, retirement, the fellowship asked me if I could come and assist you for a few weeks here. So I'm halfway through my time with you now. And we're all praying that Jeff will be back from his medical leave of absence in January. So keep on praying to that end. But I've really enjoyed being here, and part of it too is just reconnecting with people I've known for many years. Both people from Chilliwack that are now on Vancouver Island are people from Vancouver Island that I knew when I was a pastor here on the island a number of years back. What I wanted to share with you this morning is an answer to a question, or at least we'll explore an answer to a complex question, which is up on the screen. The question is, how are we to live as disciples in the contemporary world? So I hope to try to answer that question. The text I'm going to share with you does answer the question, so I hope that you'll spend more time than what I have with you here this morning on Colossians chapter 3, verses 1 to 17. Because in that passage, it's a really down-to-earth and inspiring passage. We have an answer to the question, how are we to live as disciples in the contemporary world? But first, as a reminder of where we went last Sunday, last week I shared with you that being a disciple means, and this is to use the language of the time of Jesus. If you were to look up what was a disciple as understood in the time of Jesus, you would see that a disciple was someone who was totally attached, totally devoted to a master or teacher. So if we apply it then to how Jesus understood discipleship and taught it,
it's total attachment to him, it's total attachment to Jesus. And we looked at one of the most challenging verses in the teaching of Christ from Luke chapter 9 verse 23, which reads, whoever wants to be my disciple, so if you want to be totally attached to me, if you want to be a disciple, you must deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. Now these words that demand our attention and obedience demonstrate that a life devoted to Christ will mean, and here's a bunch of words that it means, selflessness, sacrifice, surrender, and at times suffering. And I think perhaps I've already answered the question. What or how are we to live as disciples in the contemporary world? Through selflessness, sacrifice, surrender, and at times suffering.
So the sermon is now done, and thank you for attending this morning. Being a disciple, as you can see, is a 24/7 commitment. So in a sense, I've already answered the question, because every day we deny ourselves, and every day we take up our cross, and every day we follow him. That's a 24/7 commitment that we make. That's what it means to be fully attached to Jesus. Okay then, let's just take it a step further, having answered the question. Let's just substitute the word contemporary with the word secular. How do we live all out for God, for Christ in a secular society? I mean, how does that work? How can you be a 24/7 disciple in a society where expressions of faith are removed from the public sphere?
Is it possible to be a disciple in today's secular world? And to answer that question, let's read through Colossians chapter 3. And I'm going to begin with verses 1 to 4. So you can follow along on the screen or on any device or paper book that you have with you, paper Bible. Since then, you have been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. For you died, and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. Now, there's a lot there. I believe that Paul is giving us a theological perspective on who we are. We who know Christ in our lives have been raised with Christ. Already, he says, you have been raised with Christ. You see that there?
It's an already thing. He's saying this is true of you now if you are a follower of Jesus. I believe it's safe to say that some of you are dead tired this morning. You know, for us, dead tiredness defines our life because, as you may remember, we got a new puppy about 2 weeks ago. Some of you are dead tired. Some of you are dead asleep right now. So just nudge the person next to you and wake them up, please. I understand your pain fully. Staying awake for the sermon is tough. But not one of you is dead physically. So when Paul says we have been raised with Christ, he isn't referring to physical death
and physical resurrection from the grave. When he says you have been raised with Christ, he isn't referring to physical resurrection from the dead. Rather, he's describing something that's already happened, something that you've already experienced. So what he's saying is that those who belong to Christ have been, in the present, raised with Christ because they've already participated in the death and resurrection of Jesus. That's a fact. You may not feel like it sometimes, but it's a fact. Now, because this is true, because we are already raised with Christ, he says two things. He says, set your heart on things above. And second, set your mind on things above. These are very similar ideas with probably subtle shades of meaning. Your heart may refer to that which you are most seeking in life, the thing you most desire, the thing that you have set your heart on.
And your mind may refer to that which preoccupies your thoughts. So he's saying, ensure that your desires, the thing that you are most focused on, the thing you most want, and your thoughts, the thing that occupies your thoughts, are in sync with the will of your Lord and Master, remembering that you belong to an eternal kingdom. And you've probably heard the expression that a person may be so heavenly minded that they're no earthly good. That's not what this means. It's obvious the apostle is not saying walk around with your head in the clouds thinking about heaven all the time. That just sounds like a good way to get run over by a car. Kind of like the person who walks down the sidewalk with their nose in the phone. He's not saying always think about heaven and ignore all the rest.
What he is saying is engage in life on earth as a kingdom person. Live every day, each day, with a view to eternity by conforming to the will of God and his righteousness in the here and now. It's like what Jesus said. He said, and this is in Matthew 6:33, but seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. Like, seek that first. Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things, that is the stuff of life, home, income, food, and clothing, all these things will be given to you as well. Jesus is saying that as a disciple who is totally attached to him, bring your life into alignment with his kingdom and his righteousness. And when you do that, God will guide and provide. I think you would agree with me, this is very ambitious. What Jesus is saying covers it all. Like what, you might ask, it covers all of these. Our ambitions, our values, our priorities, our ethical and moral choices,
our future goals, our beliefs, our attitudes, our actions, our whole outlook on life. It covers it all. There is nothing excluded. Ambitions, values, priorities, ethical and moral choices, future goals, beliefs, attitudes, actions, our whole outlook on life. Nothing excluded. Set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. I mean, that covers it all. Why make this radical shift in focus from this world to things above? Because, he says, you died. That's an accomplished fact. You died. and your life is now hidden with Christ in God.
You're still breathing, but you died. And your life is now hidden with Christ in God. And that's speaking to this mystery idea, which is so prevalent in Colossians, which is part of the title of this whole series, Knowing the Mystery of God. Hidden means that there is mystery about this that has not yet been revealed. Well, one thing we do know, when Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. Hey, there's so many mysteries. There's so many things that we cannot explain. But there's one thing we know for certain. If you are a follower of Christ, you will be with him in glory. In the meantime, we live our lives here on earth as those who belong to that eternal kingdom with our attention focused on things above. So if you got that, I hope this makes sense.
Easier said than done. Especially in the secular world filled with attractions and distractions. Life in the 21st century offers a plethora of competing interests that fight for our hearts and minds and keep us from setting the kingdom before us. Here's an interesting quotation that I think represents 21st century thinking. It's from the founder of McDonald's, Ray Kroc. He said, "I speak of faith in McDonald's as if it were a religion. I believe in God, family, and McDonald's. And in the office, that order is reversed." This is a classic example of the effects of secularism. The dominant thinking of our time is what you would call secularism.
Secularism is not outright disbelief in God. It's not blatant atheism. There's plenty of room within secularism for a person to believe in God. Secularism is the belief that God is irrelevant, that is not relevant to our daily lives. It's not denying the existence of God. Rather, it's denying the relevance of God. That's why our culture differentiates between the secular and the sacred, and the two don't mix. There's a great wall of divide between the sacred and the secular in today's society. This is the pattern of our contemporary world. For example, in times of tragedy, a politician, no matter his or her personal faith commitment, will say, "Our prayers are with the families." But that politician may otherwise go about his or her business as if God doesn't exist.
God is there, perhaps, for times of personal tragedy or national crisis. But he can be safely ignored all the rest of the time. Because secularism teaches that God is irrelevant, not relevant to our daily lives, especially in the public sphere or the business world. Paul warns us not to conform to the pattern of our world. And as disciples who are totally attached to Jesus, we can't live this way. It's impossible to live this way. You can't be all in for Jesus and live like that. Yet the pattern of our world is deeply ingrained in us. It's like it's in the air we breathe. It's being reinforced every single day. In other words, daily we fight a battle with the prevailing belief system of our society. So that intentionally walking with God, trusting in him, committing all our ways to him each day,
all day, means swimming upstream against a torrent. I believe in God, family, McDonald's, and then the office, that order is reversed. That is our secular world talking. Now, Austin Ass famously put it this way. In the workplace, we check our religious convictions at the door with our jacket. That's true, isn't it? In the secular workplace. In the workplace, we check our religious convictions at the door with our jacket. So that's the thinking of our world. You can believe whatever you want in private. Just don't bring it to work with you. But as disciples of Christ, we can't live comfortably with this dichotomy, this division between who we are and how we live.
Being a follower of Jesus is a 24/7 commitment. It touches all of who we are. Now, this doesn't mean that we go around quoting Bible verses at people, or dropping scripture tracts, little booklets, off all around the office. Nor does it mean that we should violate the ethical guidelines of our profession. And that's super important, that we not violate the ethical guidelines of our profession. What it means is that even in situations where we cannot explicitly express our faith or identify ourselves as Christians, and there's lots of situations where this is true, we still live true to our faith and strive to live for the glory of God because we set our hearts and we set our minds on things above. For us, there is no real separation between secular and sacred. We tear down that wall because
being a disciple is 24/7. We may be swimming against a torrent, but we swim nevertheless. You can readily see that this is the opposite to the philosophy, God first, then family, then McDonald's, and the order is reversed at the office. The order is never reversed. It is always God first. And of course, this means there are some things that we will choose to do, and there are some things we will choose not to do. Now, Paul expands on these choices that we must make to live this way, because he doesn't want us to belong too much to the earthly realm in which we live, when in fact we belong to this hidden heavenly realm. So, how do we live as disciples on earth? Here's how. This is verse 5.
It's actually verses 5 to 10 that I'm going to review with you. Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature. So put it to death. You're already dead, but put it to death. Whatever belongs to your earthly nature. What is he describing here? Sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry. Now there's something true of each of these sins. Sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed. The thing that's true of each of these sins is that they come out of desire. Desire for inappropriate sexual gratification or material possessions. These sins of desire put to death. Then he says, because of these things, that is, these earthly desires, the wrath of God is coming. Then he adds, you used to walk in these ways in the life you once lived. The implication is, you no longer walk this way because you now follow the path of Christ.
But, he says, to go on, now you must also rid yourselves of all such things as these. And now he has a new list. Anger, rage, malice, slander, and filthy language from your lips. Do not lie to each other, since you have taken off your old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge in the image of its creator. Now these are sins that destroy relationships. Anger, rage, malice, slander, filthy language, lying. Says we rid ourselves of these relationship-destroying practices by taking off the old self and putting on the new self. We take off the dirty clothes of the earthly life and put on the clean clothes of the heavenly life. This is something we've done, and this is something we continue to do. Okay, I had a friend who was a faller. And he was so dirty with mud, sweat, oil, and wood chips when he came home from work in the woods
that he built a bathroom with a shower at the back entrance of his house. First thing when he got home was to take off the dirty clothes, have a shower, put on clean clothes before going one step further into the house. When we come to Christ, we are covered with the grime of the old life. But as those who are forgiven and set free by God through the death and resurrection of Jesus, we've taken off the dirty clothes and we put on the clean clothes of the new life. Every day we need to do this because every day we live in a polluted world. A world that feeds sexual immorality and greed. A world full of frustrations that feed anger and other behaviors that harm relationships. I absolutely believe that modern media feeds the sin problem.
Media gives us easy access to perversions of every kind, where sex and sports are the gods of our time, where consumerism is king, where graphic violence is everywhere, where God's name is constantly taken in vain, putting off the old self will mean vigilance. That means guarding what we take into our minds. Okay, so you may ask the question, what if I struggle with sin after I become a Christian? I mean, what if I slip off? What do I do? The answer is this. Take off the dirty clothes and put on the clean clothes all over again. Taking off the old self isn't a once-for-all-time event. I mean, that's important. That's why the Lord's Prayer contains this line. Forgive us our trespasses. Why do we have to repeatedly pray the Lord's Prayer and say, forgive us our trespasses?
Because we never stop trespassing until the Lord is revealed. Take off the old self by confessing your trespasses to God and let them go. Then, with God's help and grace, put on the clean clothes of his righteousness. This will undoubtedly require some change. Jesus once said that a disciple has to cut off a hand or pluck out an eye. Kind of an exaggerated way of saying, do whatever it takes to take off the old clothes and put on the clean clothes. Whatever it takes. What are the clean clothes? He describes them in this next section. This is Colossians 3, 12 to 14. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, that's who you are. You are God's chosen people,
holy and dearly loved. Clothe yourselves, that's an ongoing idea. Keep on clothing yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. So we are chosen, holy, and loved. Therefore, we dress appropriate to who we are. We dress with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other, forgive one another if any of you has a grievance against someone. Oh, of all the things, like that is so challenging, isn't it? Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. So each of these virtues is an expression of love, because love binds all the virtues together in perfect unity. So we are chosen, we are holy, and we are loved. And because that is our essential identity, we clothe ourselves in holiness and love.
Now I was stuck in a long line of people getting gas. And people were impatient. And they actually started honking and scowling. It was totally weird. It wasn't road rage, it was gas line rage. There's a story in Abbotsford about a person being beaten by another motorist for taking a corner too slow. Really? When we face all these kinds of situations, where tension is high, we have a choice to make. Will I choose the old way or the new way? Which clothes will I wear? Question. How are we to live as disciples in our contemporary world? Here's Paul's answer. Set your mind on things above. Set your heart on things above. Take off the old dirty clothes that belong to the old life, and put on the new clean clothes as those who are renewed to be like our Savior and Creator.
Then he gives us six things, and so here are six things you can do this week. So I'm going to number them as I read through this text. Number one, let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts. Since as members of one body, you are called to peace. Be a person of peace. Two, and be thankful. Be constantly thankful. Three, let the message of Christ dwell among you richly. So fill your mind with the word of Christ as you teach and admonish, this is number four, as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom through psalms, hymns, and songs from the Spirit. In other words, teach and encourage others. Five, singing to God with gratitude in your hearts, worship God throughout the day. And six, whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through Him. Do everything, everything for God. How are we to live out our discipleship in the contemporary world? Six things that you can do this week. One, be a person of peace. Two, be constantly thankful. Three, fill your mind with the word of Christ. Four, teach and encourage others. Five, worship God throughout the day. And six, do everything for God. And may God help us to walk out our discipleship faithfully this coming week. God be with you.